start the old clock. I got the Diet Dr. Pepper in hand. It's lukewarm today.
I should have moved my chair up.
Ooh. Lukewarm Diet Dr. Pepper. Doesn't quite hit the same. Yeah. How often do we get restocked down here on the old fridge? Because it feels like...
I think it's just when you guys come down. That's why I think this week, since everyone's here.
Okay.
I think there's a big restock, so you guys get treated right.
It's usually when I roll in, it feels like it just went in the fridge. Sometimes if I get it too early in the day, it's like lukewarm, you know? I got to have a morning Diet Coke or a morning... mid-morning. Yeah, gross. Especially lukewarm, right?
Yeah.
I got a bit of a cold, so I had to have some sort of beverage. And I can't drink water.
Why not?
It's disgusting. Just kidding. Water's okay, I guess. It's just not my fave. How you been, Brady?
Good.
Long time no see.
Yeah, good to have you back.
Yeah, you held the fort down.
I tried. You held the fort down for me and my sabbatical.
I know.
You went out and had your own elk sabbatical.
It's kind of sad, though, that now we have no more sabbaticals out ahead of us.
No more.
I know. It was a bummer. I had a real meltdown the other day when I sat down in front of my computer and I was like, oh, I don't get to go hunting.
I know.
Again,
I
for a
it.
While.
I miss it so much.
But it's application season, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, real fun.
Yeah. Sorry you got antlers right in your face.
Yeah, that's okay.
And it's your favorite kind of antler.
Yeah, just don't move them too much. You might fall off the off the table. My favorite antler animal? No,
your favorite type of antler. Yeah. The podcast with Paul was really good.
Yeah,
it was good. Yeah, and it did really well. A lot of people listened to that one, tuned in.
Yeah, I tried to pull as much as I could from Paul, while obviously throwing my input in there since I was on the hunt to for some good conversations. I think it went really well.
Yeah, it did.
It was, again, just beyond thankful. That was the coolest part, like how genuine Paul is.
Oh, I couldn't be happier for an individual. Yeah, Paul's wanted a bull elk for as long as I've known him. I feel like that has been his thing. He's been so dedicated, and he's... tried a bunch of the general season or the OTC archery tags in Colorado or wherever he can get a tag and hasn't really filled it. Had some close calls, I think. But yeah, that guy has wanted a bull elk for as long as I've known him. So that was really cool to see that all come together.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I'm trying to remember. I might have been with Clay, our camera guy, Clay. I got rumor that he'd killed a bull. I was telling Clay, I was like, yeah, I'm so stoked for Paul.
Yeah.
I could not be more thrilled for an individual to tag out.
And if you haven't listened to that podcast, I definitely suggest you check it out. It's a really good one.
Yeah.
Like I said, genuine, heartfelt, a lot of good stories, a lot of good insights from, a relatively new elk hunter finally getting the taste of success and what it means to you.
Yeah.
To push through. And I didn't know he broke or jacked up his back in the day too. And all that struggles working through that. And
I knew he's had some back issues, which is... it's pretty rough if you're an elk hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't suggest back problems if you're an elk hunter.
They're a lot of work.
Tons of work to deal with when they're dead, and then to pack one out is a whole other thing. So avoid the back problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was really cool. I was stoked for Paul, but, I'm glad to be back. There's also that, even though there's no more hunting out ahead of me, there is also part of me that's it's nice to be back in the day to day.
Catch up on the honeydews.
I've had a bit of a head cold, so those have delayed some of those a little bit. But yeah, I definitely, Christmas coming up, there's some honeydews on the list for sure. Do you want to, let's get started with promo. Let's do promo first. So we got 12 Days Insider, I know, going on.
Yep. So that's going to start, I believe, this weekend. So this podcast comes out on Thursday. I think it starts on Saturday.
This coming Saturday?
This coming Saturday.
First day?
Yep.
Okay.
So our date that is the 13th.
Gotcha.
It's usually our biggest giveaway of the year. So
Give people the rundown of what it actually is. Because when we first got started, we felt like we were always talking about 12 days of Insider when we'd sign people up and people look forward to it. But give people a rundown on what it is because we haven't talked about it for a long time.
Yep. So yeah, every year we do our 12 days of Insider giveaway, which basically means that... think of that 12 Days of Christmas song. Every single day, the prizes increase. So
could you sing it?
I think we might have a skit come up. I might be singing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So watch out. Maybe I might start a singing career. Who knows? We'll have 78 total winners, which is pretty cool. So that's 78 Insider members have a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do get lucky, you potentially could win multiple times. It's not like you win once and you're out. Of our current Insiders. And if you're not a current Insider, you still have a chance to sign up. and you'll be eligible to win whatever day comes up. So no perfect time than now to sign up using promo code podcast.
Yep.
Get $50 back in the Go and Gear Shop. Get all those research tools. Get entered to win 12 Days of Insider. And yeah, I think it's like 55-ish, maybe a little bit more, $1,000 worth of gear we're giving away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you give me an idea. Do you have any of the items, perchance? Oh,
here, let me pull them up
off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, no.
And it's a random giveaway, right? Like, yep. All you have to be is an insider, and you're automatically entered in to win.
Automatically entered to win. So I leaked it out last time. I don't know if you've heard. So I'll start with day 12. Day 12 is a big one.
Okay.
So that's 12 winners. All right. We're giving away 12 Browning X-Bolt 2
speeds
in 7 PRC. 12 of them.
Okay. I would have thought that would have been like a final day.
That is final day. 12 of them. So I'm just saying that like that's the highest prize.
Yeah, that's the highest prize. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
But it's pretty sweet. Like years past, we've done like day 4, day 5 was kind of Browning. So you get like, you know, 4 Browning rifles we give away. But this year, stepped up big.
Yeah.
Thanks to Browning. And we're giving away 12 of them.
Which I will say is a hell of a rifle.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked a little bit about it, but this gun that my kids got, it's a 6.5 PRC Browning X-Bolt. Mm-hmm. It's got the carbon fiber barrel on it. I've never... ever in my life, and I mean, I don't rifle hunt a ton. I've had, you know, I own rifles and I've done a bit of it, but I've never owned a gun that was so easy to get set up and then take to the range and shoot well.
Yeah,
like that gun absolutely, I mean, it is, it's a really accurate gun. Mm-hmm. I was telling him, I'm like, I think this might be my new favorite gun. Like he and I might be sharing that rifle until he turns 18 and moves out and he can take it out on his own. But like for a while there, I was like, I think this is probably my new deer hunting rifle.
Yeah, he took a sweet buck with it too.
Yeah, it took a great buck.
Yep, so that's day 12. Day one, let's list off a couple of really exciting ones. All of these are really exciting and very thankful for everyone, all these companies who helped us out with this giveaway. Day one, Swarovski 14x52 NL Pure Binocular.
Oh, that'd be nice.
So day one starts off with a banger. No.
Damn it.
You're not trail. You can maybe sign up as a burner account.
I want a pair of those.
Yeah. And then you're also going to get a tripod adapter for that. Day two, Vortex Ranger HD 3000, 10x42 rangefinding binos.
Nice.
Day three, 6 hour Kilo 4K BVX rangefinder.
Oh, that'd be great.
Day four, here's one that's right up your alley. You had a lot of experience and I believe this bull was taken with it this year. We're giving away 4 Matthews Arc bows.
I'll take all 4 of those.
All 4 of them?
Yeah. Actually, do you know what's interesting? I got that Matthews Arc, the 34. I got it back, I want to say like September. I think previously I might have said August, but I think I got that September 6th is what I want to say. Mm-hmm. And have been shooting it, obviously hunted with it this year. I did shoot this bull with that bow. As I was driving down here today, I was like, you know, it'd be great as if I got another one, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe because a 34 inch axle to axle, it's like a nice length where you could shoot some indoor. You could shoot some 3D with it. Obviously great for hunting, for Western big game hunting, because it's a little bit longer axle to axle.
Is that what you got? Was it 34?
Yeah, I got the 34. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was actually thinking, I wonder if I could get an order in for another 34, or maybe set that up for like a little bit more just target stuff.
Just target only?
Uh-huh. Mm. So I could use another arc.
Maybe you have to have your kids sign up.
This is going to be the best 12 days of Christmas for me ever. I'm going to win the Pures, the Arc.
Yeah.
Keep going. What else you got?
Day 5, Crispy Brickstall Mountains.
That's a great boot, too.
So, yeah, phenomenal boot. We're giving away 5 of those. Day 6, Initial Ascent EDC bag.
Okay.
That's a sweet bag that we all carry around the office. Mm-hmm. Yeah, super cool bag there. Day 7, big Tricer giveaway. Tricer BC tripod, LP panhead, and the BA bino adapter.
Nice.
So, phenomenal giveaway. Day 8, Mountain Ops duffel bag full of a ton of products from Mountain Ops.
And I got to buy some Ignite today, actually. Oh, that's on the to-buy list. Yeah.
Is it a stocking stuffer for someone or for yourself?
Yeah, my wife and kid apparently have a real affinity for Mountain Ops Ignite.
Heck yeah.
I'm like, you could just drink coffee, but nope, Ignite.
So this is our fitness day. So along with the Mountain Ops, we're also giving away a Mountain Tough annual membership too.
Oh, right on.
So there'll be 8 winners for that.
I need that too.
Day 9. Yeti.
Oh, nice.
We don't have the exact Yeti product nailed down yet. It's open in the next couple of days here, but day 9 is going to be Yeti. They stepped up.
Whatever it will be great.
Yep. Loophole sunglasses on day 10.
Right on.
We're going to have a big go hunt package on day 11. So pants, Space and Merino, Atmosphere jacket, game bags, gear bags.
Nice.
Probably a bunch of logo wear, softy, go on shirts and stuff like that. So there'll be 11 winners for that. And like I mentioned earlier, 12 Browning rifles.
Man, that's awesome.
And so, like I said, all current insiders automatically entered. You don't have to do anything. You're automatically entered. There'll be an article on Go Hunt's homepage. And every single day, we randomly will go in, pull the list of current insiders. So if you're not an insider and you sign up before 11:59 p.m. that day, you're eligible to win that day's giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
And then
any other future ones, right?
And every other future ones too. Yep. And then that morning, go through the list, pull the winners, and then I'll update the list of winners on that article, and then we'll be sending a custom email to that winner. We get it all the time. I mean, I would probably do it too. Like, people respond back like, hey, is this spam? Did I actually win?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always cool when some people do that, you know, and like, hey, you actually won this. This is real.
Does the email come from you?
No, it's going to come from one of the guys in the office. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. I used to do them back in the day.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then like,
I was trying to give people a heads up. If you get a special email, you know, with, you know, maybe not just the normal Go Hunt email, maybe give it a heads up, give it a look.
Yep. So definitely be checking out your emails. Like, we want to give these away. So check your emails, respond back to it. Check your spam if you need to, because sometimes people's personal emails from this office might go to spam if you're never, you know, reach out to one of these people before in the office. So yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Right on.
Well, big giveaway.
I'm going to check my email.
Yep. We'll be announcing this stuff on social too. So people are following along. There'll be some Instagram stories and Facebook stuff and emails and that sort of thing. But you want to check out this article. That'll be live. Probably I'll kick this out maybe Friday, this article ahead of time, but it gives people a little heads up on what's going on there. Nice. When this goes out, we're going to have our Go Hunt roundup or our postseason roundup party
tomorrow night.
So Thursday, December 11th, if you're around and you hear this podcast and you're in Vegas, sure, stop on by.
Yeah. What are we doing? We're doing dinner, doing some food.
Yeah. Free food, free drinks. I think we have some adult beverages and some
raffles for some other cool gear, which I understand were any proceeds that we raise from raffles, we're going to donate back to a conservation group.
Yep. We're doing a fraternity Desert Bighorn.
Okay.
So yeah, keeping it local, helping those guys out, because they did a lot of cool projects along here. And
yep.
And yeah, there's a ton of cool prizes for that too. So like, come in here, buy some raffle tickets, all that stuff's going to be donated to the conservation group. And it's a great, great chance to win some sweet gear. I know we have like Revic, they have a rifle scope. Kefaro donated a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and it's a good hang.
Yeah, Uncharted Supply kicked some stuff in.
It was like, fun last year.
Yeah, it's a big prize list. I'm probably not doing it justice by naming up all the prizes. Don't have the list in front of me pulled up, but yeah, a lot of cool stuff.
Right on.
And just hang out, have a good time.
Yeah, that's tomorrow night. Starts at
5-ish.
5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very cool. 5, maybe to 9 o'clock.
Yeah, so if you're in town for NFR or whatever you might be, pop down to the office tomorrow night and hang out.
See,
good deal.
Let's look at that.
Okay. Anything else before we talk elk hunting?
Talk elk hunting. Yeah. Just remember, use promo code podcast. Save yourself some money if you're not an insider.
For sure.
Get it right now. Like, we're talking about how excited we kind of are for app season. It's arguably one of my favorite times of the year.
Yeah.
Planning out right now. You know, I know we both talked about it. You know, Idaho's draw.
Mm-hmm.
Are researching our 5 choices and all that stuff, and then just rolling from there.
I got to get mine done today, and I know later today I think we're doing a Q&A for social. Yeah. Just answer some questions. You can answer people's questions if they say what deer unit should I play?
No, no, you know me, Drew.
Yeah. Nor am I going to tell you what elk unit to apply for.
No, we got the research rules in front of you. You guys can use them, but we'll walk through some, you know, general questions.
Yeah, that's why you got an account, right? You can figure a lot of that out on your own. But yeah, the unit to hunt elk in is the one with elk in it.
Cool. Yeah, that's one that you have a tag for. So any of them are good.
That's it.
Just put your effort in, and you'll have fun
for sure. Well, do you want to recap? Do you want to talk Arizona elk?
Let's talk about this elk in front of me. So if you guys are listening on Spotify, Apple, wherever, check out the YouTube video. You'll see Charles Bull here.
Yeah. Yeah. I got lucky and killed one.
Got lucky, huh?
Yeah, I did get lucky. I don't know. That's interesting. I've had this thought, like, I've had people ask me, they'd be like, oh, congrats on the bull. And I've said, yeah, I got lucky. And then I think we've had the discussion in the past, like, does luck actually exist? You know, I don't know what you call luck, but I think obviously, you know, there's effort and preparation and time that goes into it. But then it does feel like every once in a while you just get like a scenario where you can't really explain it. It just goes your way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to explain that other than luck, right? You just sometimes you do just get lucky, you know, one steps out and, you know, obviously made the stock and everything, but reality is I feel like I got really fortunate in the way that unfolded. But
walk me through how this hunt came together.
Yeah, so this is a late archery hunt, and you know, I'm I'm somewhat hesitant. I don't know that it's not a secret by any means. I think definitely there are people that are picking up on, you know, late season archery, elk hunting and deer hunting opportunities, I would say. For me, it's been on my radar for a number of years. I think this is the fourth. Actually, I was driving back and I was thinking about it. This is the fourth tag I've drawn in Arizona for elk. And I've drawn, so that's one more tag for big bulls than I've drawn in my home state of Utah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in way less time. Mm-hmm. You know, like the late archery hunt really didn't come onto my radar until, you know, later. But I think they're just such cool opportunities. You know, Utah's got late season archery elk hunts that they've started. They don't give that many tags away. Harvest success has been historically pretty low over the last, I want to say, 2-3 years that they've done it. But it feels
What are we talking about in terms of lower compared to rut hunt?
Like the first year, I think they killed 2 bulls statewide.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
On that late hunt. The next year, it was a little bit better. It feels like people are picking up on the idea. And I think the guys that I know that are killing bulls, that have killed bulls, are pretty hardcore hunters. Like, they're guys that I would expect to kill whether they hunted early or late. They're guys that really tend to, in my opinion, like, dedicate a lot of time and effort into hunting. It's like a major part of their life. But then there's some guys that have just, you know, killed some bulls, but it feels like, you know, it's picking up. People are kind of seeing it as an opportunity to draw a tag with far fewer points, which is the reason I applied for the late hunts here, is because I just don't want to wait, you know, 12, 15, 20 years to draw a rut hunt. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's more important to me, right? Like, I love hunting elk. You love hunting mule deer. You probably would wait 20 years maybe to draw a good deer tag, maybe.
Well, I'm talking about just elk. Like, I don't prioritize them, I'm fine to wait.
Yeah. I said that backwards.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I draw one, I'll be stoked. It'll be a really good tag, but I'm willing to wait. I'm not like trying to prioritize it or trying to like, I know I could draw some right now. I was looking at last year. I can draw a lot in this state.
Like, you and I are exactly opposite. Like, I've got deer points in a similar category in a lot of states to what you have for elk points in a lot of states, because it's just like where your value lies, right? Like, I love hunting elk, whether it's, you know, bugling or you know, sitting a wallow or spot and stock. Like, spot and stock elk hunting to me is really fun, especially in a state like Arizona, when you can go and do it in November and your daytime highs are like 50s, you know, nights it might touch 30, high 30s or something, maybe a couple nights where it got freezing. But for the most part, you know, it's sunny days and you're spot and stock elk hunting in some really, really nasty, rough terrain.
And the nice part about that being nasty, rough terrain is you get a lot of darkness nighttime to recover.
Oh, yeah, you're going to bed.
You can catch your sleep and get lots of sleep.
Yeah, me and my buddy Neville, Chris Neville, a lot of nights we sat there in my 4Runner and watched Netflix at night, because we had movie night pretty much every night for 4 or 5 nights in a row.
Cause that's cute.
Yeah, it was cute. Yeah, we did. We would get back to camp. We would make dinner. We would sit in the 4Runner and we would watch a movie. So we did movie night.
Okay.
But yeah, you do get a lot of time to sleep. But yeah, it's just fun. But yeah, I mean, that's what put it on my radar, was just an opportunity to hunt units that can produce big bulls where I don't have to wait 10 years to draw or 12 years to draw a tag. And, you know, knowing full well that the harvest success is typically less than 10%, but if I hunt really hard, I might have the opportunity at a nice bull. I'm 50% right now on late season tags. So like I said, I've had 4, I've killed 2 bulls and 4 tags, which is higher than, you know, average, but, you know, I've got the time and effort to pour into it, and I've got maybe a little bit of experience under my belt. I felt really good about. That's kind of how it came to be.
How'd you and Neville decide to go together?
Neville had hunted another unit a few years ago and had hunted it by himself. And the other three hunts that I've done by myself. It's really hard to do on your own, spot and stock elk, because they'll get up and move. And in a lot of these cases, your stocks are 4 or 5 hours, maybe, you know, potentially. So to like try to keep track of an animal is really tough on your own. You know, doable. I did it on the first one, but ever since then, the ones that I've done on my own, it's like, it's really hard. So I was trying to find somebody, that would be willing to go with me and hunt together and be a spotter, essentially. Yep. And so we started kicking around ideas. I hunted this unit before, and the first time I hunted, I had a really good experience. I didn't tag out. I missed a bull, which I've talked about, but had a great experience where I was seeing probably 5 to 15 bulls a day, like, in different bulls. Like, it just felt like they were moving. And Saw some great quality that first year I hunted it. I hunted a bull for a couple days. I saw two times that I thought was probably mid 360s. He had double swords on both sides. So I was just like, yeah, this is definitely, you know, a good unit, opportunity to see a lot of elk. And, you know, I kind of pitched Neville on the idea and he was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, rolling into this year, it was an entirely different experience, which is crazy because you would see some elk in the same general type of areas, but definitely not the same numbers. And quality definitely was not there like it was 4 or 5 years ago when I hunted it. But it's had my wheels turning as far as why.
Yeah.
Some of it's probably management. I think some of it is drought. That's what's fun about when you've hunted, like I'm getting older, and as long as I've hunted and I've had the opportunity to hunt a bunch of different areas, it's really interesting, like the inferences that you can draw. So like the second time I hunted another unit in Arizona, it was an entirely different experience than the first time I hunted it. And it was on the backside of 2 years of really bad drought. The bulls that I were seeing were definitely, you could tell, were not the same growth potential, like decent bottom ends, but almost no tops at all. And it just felt like I saw fewer bulls in general. This year, Arizona's been super dry through most of the year.
Yeah.
Similar type of experience. Just the size of bulls, the quality of bulls definitely was not there. Just the number of bulls didn't seem to be the same. So yeah, I'm starting to like learn and like draw some inferences like, okay, yeah, this is what potentially does happen when you've got a drought year or 2 years worth of drought. And I don't know that it would like necessarily change my draw strategy. It might, like in the future, I might take it now that I've done it two times on drought years and been like, yeah, okay, this is a definite effect. Like there's definitely something different going on.
Yeah, learning something that you can put forward to new app years.
Yeah, if I get back up and building some points and I'm thinking about burning them again, I might wait for a year where I think there's a better potential for maybe a more normal growth year, if you will, for feed. Gotcha. So I'm learning some things.
Yeah.
But yeah, Neville was gracious enough to go with me and sign up for a little bit of a, I don't know, I would say it was a suffer fest, but at the end of it, he was like, I think I might have put weight on during this hunt, because it's a lot of sitting. It's a lot. It's a ton of glassing. It's like hunting third season mule deer for elk, you know?
Yep.
You're going to make some stalks, but reality is you're just going to sit behind a spotting scope or a tripod with some binos on it for most of your trip. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get a drink or I'm going to hack.
Dr. Pepper, shout out.
Warm Dr. Pepper.
Sounds so gross that you're drinking that right now.
It is, actually. I should have just got water. But we can run through the hunt.
Yeah, run through it.
Basically, yeah. I'll skip a bunch of the details as far as just like the day in, day out of a lot of it. But basically, I had one area I wanted to focus on. It's the same area that I'd hunted 4 years ago. I think we rolled into it. We saw a few bulls, but not really.
Did you try to do any pre-scouting before the season opened?
I didn't do any pre-scouting because I'd hunted it before. I lie. I did look at some other areas, like if this doesn't work out, where could I broaden my horizons and maybe find some other elk? And we did end up venturing into other parts of the unit just to take a look. Didn't really pan out because a lot of the other country that we looked at was just so thick and choked out. It was like the opportunity to actually spot and stalk was just slim to none. I know guys that did it and did it successfully, but I don't know how exactly. Yeah. Maybe ambush style, but mostly we just focused on, you know, one core area because, like I said, I'd hunted it before.
Is it a place where you're like setting up a main base camp and you're just venturing out from there? Could you backpack it maybe?
You could do like overnighters, like, which the first time I hunted it, that's what I was doing when I was on my own, was to just try to cut the distance between me and bulls so that I could actually maybe find a bull in his bed before he got up and moved. So I was doing, you know, one or two nights, and I was backpacking basically across these big drainages and just trying to get on the same side as the elk so that I could cut that distance earlier. You could do it, but for the most part, like there's decent access. It's not, I say decent, but the roads are just terrible. Here's the thing about Arizona. I'd be curious. So people that hunt Arizona all the time, Arizona residents, like, do they ever like actually do any road improvement on those? Because it feels like rather than doing any road improvement on public land, basically what they've done is just said, oh, you don't like it? Okay, we'll just buy a side-by-side. That's on you. So like you buy a side-by-side or an ATV, and that's how you're going to access these roads, because the roads themselves are horrendous. Just terrible, which... you know, the first night I went in, I got there earlier before Neville. So I got there an evening to scout, and I took my 4Runner in way farther than I should have. And, you know, the next day Neville was like, man, how'd you get your 4Runner in this stuff? And he was like, I should buy a 4Runner because they will go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm proof positive, but they will take a beating also. My poor 4Runner is hammered. Yeah. It's definitely came home with some scars, I saw some bulls that first evening, and then Neville and I just started to check it out. Just kind of hunting the same area. We set up a base camp. I want to say it was the third morning. Hit one of my very favorite overlooks, and we glassed all morning long, ended up seeing some elk, and then Neville ended up glassing up two bulls at the bottom end of the canyon, like way, way down the canyon. And we just made a mental note of it because it was not like they were even within striking distance. You know, we just thought, well, if nothing else doesn't pan out, we'll, maybe we'll make a trip down later in the day and just see what's going on. So class the rest of the morning, it got to be like midday, and we were just kind of kicking around ideas. And I said, I can't remember if he said or I said, but it was like, hey, let's just run down there and just see if we can cut the distance, and maybe we can get glass on one of these bulls and just make something happen in the evening. So took off midday, all the way down the canyon, which were probably, I want to say 2.5-3 miles down canyon. And we get down there, sit down behind my tripod, throw it up with the binoculars, and like within 3 seconds, I see this bull. And he's like,
better. It's always crazy to me how like you always want that to happen. And it seems like it happens more and more. Like you just sit down in a spot, pull up binos, first place you look, boom, there's an animal.
Yeah. I mean, like I couldn't believe it based on where they were at. I would have thought they would have gone over the backside of the ridge, you know? Mm-hmm. It was kind of like sparse PJ. And then you've always got that like undergrowth. I don't know what it is, cat claw and a bunch of different stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, to just basically sit down and look through the binos and within 3 seconds, just see this rear end of an elk underneath this juniper. I was just like, oh, there's
a school bus.
Yeah. I was just like, there's a bull. And he's like, what? And I was like, yeah, there's a bull. There's gotta be a bull right here. So we threw up the spotting scope and took a look at it. And his head was so buried up in the juniper, you actually could not see, like we couldn't see anything. Like we were having a hard time even making out if it was a bull, but based on location and then just body size, I was like, that's gotta be a bull. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd known in the morning when we'd seen him, like they looked decent frame, but they were so far away, you couldn't really tell anything. But, I was just like, what do you want to do? And I said, you know, do you want to go? And he's like, no, if you want to go, go. And, I was like, you sure? And he's like, yeah, go. So I was like, okay.
Spot him, you got him.
Yeah. So no waste of time at all. Like I threw my pack on and just took off, and I had to go down a canyon, up the other side, down the next canyon, and then up the other side. And he was bedded kind of towards the top of the ridge. And made the whole trip as fast as I could. As I got into the second canyon, I actually was cliffed out. So I had to go all the way down towards the end of the ridge to find a way down and around the end, and then started up the other side. And I started up the other side, and I probably got like 2/3 of the way. And I knew that bull was like right at the top. And this bull was like in the most primo spot and stock situation. Like he's under this big juniper. It's almost in this little saddle at the top of the ridge. There's tons of reference points for me.
Perfect.
I got the wind in my favor. It's like blown out of the south. So I'm coming in from the north, and I'm like, this bull is just like dead to rights. Like, you know, I can cut this distance and, you know, no problem at all. But I got about 2/3 of the way to the top. I'm probably 250 yards or so from where I think this bull is. And I get a text message from Neville, and he's like, hey, that bull just got up and went over the top. I was like, you can't see him. And he's like, nope, totally gone. He's like, he went over the top. I have no clue. So at that point I was just like, what do I do? And I'd already made the whole trip over there, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to go to the top. And if I get to the top and I can't find him, then I'm just going to start still hunting.
Yeah, this is a good point that I always try to bring up with people. And when we're hunting too, like, sure, it didn't go the way you planned, but you already, like you said, you already made that effort. I was thinking, you got to finish the stock. You got to try to make something work out. Like, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to keep going. Yeah. I mean, I knew at that point, like the chances actually getting an opportunity or even seeing him again was slim to none, but I was like, I'm already here. I'm invested. Yeah. I might as well just go. So I climbed all the way to the top and I got into the top and it was kind of like a little bit of a saddle. I look back to my left and there's like a bit of a peak that I could have climbed. And the other side of it is like this nice big basin. And I can see that the, it'd be like the east facing slope. It's kind of northeast facing. It's starting to shade out because the sun's getting a little bit lower in the sky. And I thought, you know, I could climb to the top of that and maybe I'll pick him up. And I sat there and considered that for a while, but I thought, you know, if I go up and I do pick him up, I don't know that I'll actually have like enough time to make a full run at him. So I just thought rather than climb that up in glass, like I'm just going to start steel hunting. So I got to the top, kind of went up and over the other side. All the topography and the vegetation on the other side is pretty much the same. So it's not like I could be like, oh, this is an alley, you know, where I think an elk would walk through or where he would be. I just basically picked and I thought, you know, I'm just going to like maybe grit it out. Right. So got into a little alley and I just started still hunting. And what I would do is I'd take two or three steps at a time and just listen. And I'd sit and watch and take three or four steps and just stop and listen. And I'd probably gone, I want to say 200, 300 yards. And I came around and I was just, this is another little tip, maybe pass it on, but I was basically going from shadow to shadow. So anytime I could get like in the shade line of some trees, I would stay in the shade line of the trees. And if I got into an opening, you know, I was looking for the next shade. So I was just going
trying to conceal yourself.
Yeah. Just trying to, yeah, conceal any movement and just trying to, you know, keep the shine off of you, you know, cause the sun was getting a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically just thinking like, if I do happen to see this bull before he sees me, I'm going to have a lot better opportunity if I'm like tucked in the shade versus, you know, being out in the direct sun. So I was going shade to shade and just going real slow. And, there's a big juniper tree. I was on the downhill side of it and I kind of worked out around the front of it. And again, as I was approaching like line of sight, like if you break line of sight, like I was going super slow, just taking my time and like looking all around. So I eased out to the edge of this juniper. And as I got to the edge, I stopped and I was listening and I like heard something and it wasn't like super loud. It was just like subtle, you know, like hooves on the ground. And I was like, God, did I hear that right? So I took like one more step and I'm just kind of scanning and I'm like looking back to my left and I'm coming across and I like look to my right. And as I look to my right, this bull's just standing there looking at me. So like he'd been bedded underneath a juniper just uphill from me and he just stood up and he took like maybe two steps out, which is what I heard. And so I look at him and I'm tucked away in the shade of this tree, like right up against this tree. I look at him and he's like looking down at me, but he like, I can tell just by like his body language, he's not like on alert. Like he has no idea what's going on. Like he's
perfect.
It was perfect. Yeah. Like he's just, he's aware that something's up, but he's like, doesn't know what's up. Right. So, he's pretty good line of sight, like pretty open between he and I. So I just like very gently, like eased out my range finder and ranged him. I think he was 66 yards, which is not short, but not long either. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's a makeable shot. And so ease my rangefinder back in my pouch and, you know, look at my sight. Just, I'm doing everything ultra slow. Mm. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, probably isn't going to work. He's probably going to pick up some movement, right? Like this just doesn't happen. Like they don't just stand there and like let you look at them and, you know, yeah, take a shot, right? So I'm doing everything ultra slow and, I dial my sight to 66.
You still standing at this point too?
Yeah. Still standing. Yeah. He's just standing there looking at me, like looking in my direction and, you know, I'm just kind of standing there. And so, you know, I've got an arrow knock cause I had an arrow knock the whole time cause I was just still hunting. Right. Mm-hmm. And, got my arrow knocked, got my sight dialed. I've got the range, which is good. And so like, I just real slowly, like just deliberately come to full draw and settle my pin in on him. And at that point, he kind of like perked up a little bit because there's like the movement of you drawing your bow, even though I'm in the shade. He kind of perked up and leveled in on him. Everything felt good. I remember checking my bubble. I remember, you know, like trying to center my peep and everything. And I was shooting probably 15 degrees uphill, okay. Maybe 10, 15. So uphill a little bit. Real makeable shot. Everything felt super comfortable and, you know, shot broke, kind of surprised me when the shot broke. And, I don't remember like a loud thwack. Ultimately, I don't know how I didn't hear a loud thwack because it was definitely bone. Like I hit, I mean, it should have like ricocheted across the canyon. Like I should have heard something.
Okay.
I don't remember that, but I remember thinking like, oh, that felt like a good shot. I remember it looked like a good shot. Definitely knew it hit him, and he immediately, like, as I shot, and I don't know if it was like before the shot or just immediately after the shot, he basically reversed. So he wheeled back kind of the direction, you know, opposite of who he was facing. He like wheeled back, and then he ran behind this big juniper tree and then just like disappeared over the top. And, you know, I was like obviously nervous at that time. That's like when the adrenaline really hits me, you know? And I was like, oh man. So I try to get a hold of Neville. I can't get a hold of Neville. I got like no service, you know, so I can't get anything through. So I thought I'm going to give it like 5 minutes, maybe 10. And then I'm going to walk up to the point of impact to where the shot was. And I'm just going to look and see what I can see before I actually like, pursue him.
Mm-hmm. And probably like stealthily walking up, close that distance.
Yeah. Just super slow. So I give it that time, and I walk up and I can see his tracks, which are like real heavy in the dirt. And I'm like, okay, you know, he went this way. So I walked like maybe 15, 20 yards, and I see my arrow. Mm. And I was like, okay. And the arrow is like blood probably 3/4 of the way. I'm like, well, that's good. You know, that's a great sign. At least I got 3/4 of the arrow, and I shoot, you know, 29.5-inch shaft. So I'm like, that's pretty good. It was a little concerning though. It was weird because the insert was like bent over like a 45-degree angle with the broadhead. And I was like, huh, well, it probably definitely hit something hard. Usually it'll blow through rib, right? So that was a little concerning, but I will say there was blood everywhere.
Oh.
Like at that point, I mean, walk at pace, blood, like wild, dumping blood. And I was like, okay, well, that's a good sign. And so I give it maybe another 10 minutes or something. And I'm wildly trying to like get a hold of Neville, you know, I'm like trying to call him. I'm trying to text him because he's at a point where he could actually see that bull if he came back over the ridge.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to get a hold of Neville. And finally, like I get a text message to go through, and he texts me back and he's like, dude, that bull just came back over the ridge. And he's like, he is hit really hard. He's like, I'm watching him. He's like, he's bedded just off the other side. He's like, he's not that far from the top. He's like, he is bedded, but he is like really hurt. Like he looks sick. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, good sign, you know?
Yep.
So I think I'm going to give it like a half hour.
Okay.
And hopefully he's just, you know, dies, right? So I give it probably a half hour, and I'm sitting there. I'm just like waiting on pins and needles. I'm like checking in with Neville, and he's like, yeah, he's still bedded there, but he's definitely like his head's kind of bobbing. He doesn't look that well, but he's still alive. And at that point, I'm thinking like, okay, if he is just right off the other side and he is really hurt, like Neville's telling me, but he's not dead, like I should be able to like sneak in and let like end this, right? So at that point, I just start going real slow, and I'm just blood trailing. You know, I'm getting updates from Neville. Neville could see me. He'd be like, hey, that bull is 50 yards below and to your left. And I mean, he is bedded in just a sea of vegetation, like just thick, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm asking Neville, you know, what do you think I should do? And he's like, this is like paramount. People could say what they want. But like in this situation, it was fantastic because Neville can look at it from his objective, and he can say, because if I'd have followed blood,
you'd have rushed it.
I would have rushed it. There's no way I could have been able to sneak up to that bull,
yeah,
like, because he just went through some thick stuff, you know, mm-hmm. But Neville's like being able to see from his perspective. He's like, okay, from your point, he's like, go to your right 30 yards, see that chute, walk down that chute, come to your left 5 feet, go down. I mean, he's like really helping me like pick mm-hmm. my way through this. Right. And so I work down the hill, and I get to a point where I'm probably like 45 yards from the bull, and he's immediately to my left. And at that point, like I can see him. He's bedded uphill, so he's got his head uphill, and I don't have like a window for a shot, but I can see the bull, and his head is like bobbing. Like I can see his like head bob, and then he'll like lay his head over on his side, and then he'll pick it up, but his head is like bobbing. And I'm like, okay, he's obviously super sick, but at this point, it'd probably been like an hour and a half.
Okay.
And I think, okay, I'm going to take like two steps downhill and hopefully that'll open up a window where I can get another arrow into him. So I'm trying to take those two steps. And as I make that second step, he like picks up the movement and he like picks his head up.
game of inches.
Yeah. Gal, I got a bit of a head cold. So it's like I'm running out of voice. Anyway, so he stands up. As he stands up, I draw the bow. I got no shot. But as he stands up, like I can tell that like he is hurting. Like he can barely get up. And he turns downhill and he starts downhill. And at that point, I'm like, I just need to get this bull killed. Like I need to end his suffering. I need, you know, obviously whatever the first shot, wherever it landed, you know, wasn't perfect. But I need to get this bull killed. And I thought, as bad as he's hurting, because I could see it, I thought, you know, I can push it. So I just started walking fast. Got on his blood trail and like I could walk it at pace. So I'm just like walking down the hill. I'd pop up over like a little bit of a clearing and I'd see him standing there and I would try to get to an area like where I could get a shot and I couldn't get a shot and he'd go down maybe another 10 yards. And we're just basically like playing this game of cat and mouse, right? Yeah. For like another 15 minutes. Eventually he gets down to a point and I can just see his tops and I'm like looking, he's just standing there and I see this rock and it's like tall enough that I think if I get up on it and I get up on my tippy toes, like I can maybe get an arrow up and over the top of this vegetation, like down into his vitals. So I sneak down like real quiet and I get onto this big rock, I climb up on top of it and I can just see like, oh, maybe the top 2 inches of his lungs and then like his back kind of that void in the hump. But I've got a window and I think like if I can get one into him, you know, at that point I can take care of it. And it's on the downhill, so I thought at least I'll get the offside lung, right? So anchor in, make the shot and hits him. And to me it like looks good. I'm like, okay, that's good. But he like takes 3 or 4 steps to the right and it opens him up completely at that point. Like good. I can see him completely. And at that point I'm standing there watching him and I can tell that like he's probably going to expire, but I've got arrows in my quiver and he's still standing. So throw another arrow in 35 yards. And at that point, just make a great shot, hit him right behind the shoulder, exits, you know, opposite side. And, I mean, I don't know how graphic you want me to be, but,
whatever you need to do.
Boning's a weird thing. And I don't, here's like something that like I've been thinking about a lot. So they're like when you're rifle hunting, like you can reach out and touch an animal, right? Yep. Like at the furthest, you might be shooting 100 yards in most cases, right? Or closest. So you don't get to really like witness the death of an animal.
That's so true.
Like you do with bow, bone arrow. So I'm watching him with that third shot. It blows through him and I can see his entire chest cavity like caving on the inhale. And as he's blowing air out, you can see like you can see the air expelling. You can see the blood.
Yeah.
It's just hard. Like it's so visceral and it's I don't know. It's I've wrestled with this a lot. It's like this thing that we do, it just like hit me really hard. Like I just took this animal's life.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm watching this animal expire.
Yeah. That's such a close distance.
Close. It's like really, I don't know, for lack of a better word, it's like this like intimate thing. Like I felt a lot in that moment. Like I felt bad. I felt good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did this thing that I felt like I felt some satisfaction. Like this is a hard thing that I did, that I worked for, that I really wanted to have happen. But I also felt this like really heavy sense of just sadness that like I did that thing, you know? So it's really heavy.
Yeah.
And, watched him die, tipped over and he laid there and, I was sitting there looking at him and then, just last death kicks, kicked his legs and he rolled over. And he went straight downhill and he slid underneath this giant juniper and he had like his back end hanging off probably like a 5-foot ledge, but he was just like wedged in this tree. I mean, like just wedged. And, made the trip down, saw him, you know, got a hold of Neville, and I said, yeah, he's dead. I'm right here with him. And he was like, let me get my stuff and I'll head that way. Funny thing about this, I will giggle about this forever, right? So Neville just comes, right? Like he's on his way. He asked me, do you need anything? I'm like, nope, I'm good. I got everything I need. Just come. And he's like, cool. So he comes. We get the bull, and I'll talk about getting it out and getting it taken care of. But we get the bull taken care of, but we make it back that night late. It's like well after dark. It's probably midnight, one. Mm-hmm. We get to my truck. My spotting scope, my tripod, everything is still set out.
Oh, gosh.
My windows are all down in my truck.
Like, pretty gear.
Yeah. Like Neville just went.
Just went without yeah. grabbing it.
I was laughing. The vehicle. I was laughing up. So hard. I was like, you didn't even roll the windows up. He's like, nope. Yeah. I was like, do you have my keys? He's like, yeah, I got your keys. But like my Swaro spotting scope sitting out there, my windows are open.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was laughing so hard. I had this vision of like Neville being so excited, which I think he probably genuinely yeah, was. He was probably just so jacked and so excited. He just grabbed everything and like came and
mm-hmm. yeah, that's funny.
It was really funny. But yeah, we you know, pack a pack saw.
Yeah.
So people ask me like, how do you skull cap a bull? That's how I skull cap it. But thank God I brought that saw, because I would have never been able to get that bull out of that tree for one. Mm. And there was a point where I was asking Neville, I was like, do I just like butcher this bull right here? I don't know what else to do. And he's like, well, let's keep trying. So I end up cutting
he's just wedged tight.
Wedged. I mean, wedged.
And everyone who's been up on a bull knows they're almost impossible to move. Even with two people and they're stuck like that.
And I will say this was like the other bull I killed in Arizona with my bow in the late hunt. Body wise, I remember thinking like, he looks smaller bodied than bulls I've killed other places. This bull was giant bodied. I mean, really big. In fact, I took him to a local butcher because we still had the rest of the hunt for Neville to try to fill his tag. So the next day we took him to a local butcher, and I remember, you know, he weighs everything and he throws the hind quarter up on the hook. And I remember him going, oh, like it was 60 pounds flat. Yeah. One of them might've been just over 60, but, yeah, I remember him being like, oh, this is a big body bull. Mm. Like this is a heavy old ham. So yeah, it was heavy, but yeah, we spent the rest of the evening. It probably took us, no lie, how about it took us an hour and a half to 2 hours probably just to get that bull down the hill to a point we could work on him and take some photos. Like it took a long time. Jeez. Of just like cutting, busting branches, trying to pull and wedge. The other thing I was worried about was like you had to do everything from above. Like you couldn't get below the mm-hmm. bull, because I'm like, this is a 750-800 pound animal that like if he could gets roll rolling downhill and you're below it, like you're completely effed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had to be really careful because I didn't want anybody to die either. But yeah, I got him down there, took some photos, you know, got him butchered, which I will say I hunt a lot on my own. I have done in the past. Taking care of a bull elk on your own is no joke. And I will say I don't necessarily enjoy that process. Having a buddy with you to help you butcher a bull mm-hmm. is like one of my favorite times of that whole hunt.
Yeah, just like, conversations, the extra help, the extra hands you get. Like,
yeah,
grab a leg if I want to cut this. You know, I have to try to like wedge some trekking poles underneath it.
And yeah, like, we're just talking. You know, we're talking about life and mm-hmm. everything. You know, and just butchering a bull together. It was so fun.
Did you guys debone it right there?
No, we just left quarter. Yeah, we did full quarters because it wasn't that far. We had some elevation to gain, but it wasn't like reality all that far back to the truck. So we decided to leave everything bone in. That night we packed out the two fronts, I want to say all the loose meat, mm-hmm. so tenderloins, backstrap, and then the next morning we got up and came back for a hindquarter piece and packed that out. And that was fun too. Mm-hmm. Just like
I do enjoy a good pack out.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. You know, looking back, every hunt, I feel like you've got different moments that you remember or that you enjoy about it, right? Like sometimes you make the perfect shot on an animal and like that lives with you and you remember it forever. And then some hunts, it's like the other things that mm-hmm. kind of make up the hunt and the experience. And I will say that for this one, just having Neville there and getting to hang out with a hunting buddy and butchering it and just having the camaraderie and then also just having a buddy to help you pack it out was, it was fun just hanging out and shooting the bull. But yeah, got him out, got him to the butcher. And then we hunted the rest of the hunt for Neville. And unfortunately we had days and days and days of rain. I think it rained for like 8 straight days.
Gosh,
I mean, hard. All day, every day. We had one other really cool bull that we'd watched that I really wanted Neville to kill and, made a couple plays on him. Neville made one other stalk on another bull and got so close. I mean, and that's the other thing is like choosing your hunting buddies, like choose somebody that's a gamer. Like, and Neville is an absolute gamer. Like I would be like, oh, there's a bull over there. I'm like, it probably take you 2 hours to get there. And he's like, okay, I'm gone.
Yeah, just goes.
Yeah, pack on, gone, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd done that same stalk on a different bull, I think this first or second day, unsuccessful. I got to about 55 yards and he bailed. But that hike sucked. I came back to the tent that night and I was like, that sucked. I hated it. And, you know, Neville coming back that night after his stalk that didn't quite work out, I was like, how was the hike? It sucked, huh? And he's like, yeah, it wasn't bad. I was like, that's you cool. Suck. I'm like, Okay, Neville. But yeah, he was just like, yeah, that wasn't bad. But yeah, man, choose a hunting partner that's a gamer. And Neville's an absolute gamer for anything. So yeah, it was fun. But ultimately, you know, Neville got a couple opportunities for one stalk and then another one where we were just trying to make an ambush play on a really cool bull. It was an 8x3, just an inline 8 on one side and a 3-point on the other.
Huh. Wonder what happened there.
I don't know. Cool bull.
Yeah.
If anybody kills that bull,
you want to see
and
it?
And listens to this podcast. I want to see that bull. I want to see some photos of this because it was such a cool bull. I love that bull.
Like a big 8 on the one side?
Like a big old bull. Yeah. Huh. 8, like, I mean, not like 370 or anything, just like an inline 8. So 2 brow tines, 2/3, 4/5, 6th. 7th and then the beam.
Wow.
And then the other side, two brow tines, one's kind of a floater and then just a big giant spike.
Huh.
But just such a rad bull. But the last night that Neville had to hunt, we made a play on him in the afternoon, got within what we thought was, you know, 200-300 yards of where we thought he was probably bedded. And then, that evening, like we could hear rocks rolling. It sounded like we could hear antlers like rubbing brush and stuff. Neville made a loop on him. I just stayed put because we had the wind and he didn't even see any elk, but like for probably 20 minutes, I could hear elk around him. And that's just how that late stuff is. It's just so thick, you know, like you could have elk within 100 yards of you and never see them.
So what are basically keys to success on a late season archery elk hunt, in your opinion?
Yeah. So I get asked this quite a bit actually, since like more people are getting a little interested in just drawing a tag. This is going to be like, I feel like I'm like copping out with this answer, but I think the biggest difference is just a go for it attitude and like just going, just trying it, like knowing full well the opportunity that you will get in range and get a chance to make a shot is like slim to none. You know, this bull that I put a stalk on, I think it was the second day, I remember walking off the ridge and I had to lose probably 1,000 foot elevation and gain 1,000 foot and really rocky, nasty terrain. Like I remember walking off that hill and thinking like, and based on where this bull is bedded, I'm like, this isn't going to work. Like, I know it's not going to work,
but you gotta try it.
I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Cause what if, right? And it's kind of the same thing with this bull. He was in a great spot and I could have just turned around and been like, yeah, he's gone, went over the backside. He's out, you know, but I thought, you know, I'm just going to gain the rest of the elevation. I'll just keep going to the top and I'm just going to still hunt and see what happens. But I really think like that's the biggest difference is just, you just can't say no to stalks. Mm-hmm. Like if you got a bull and you can see him and he's in a spot where you think you might be able to get to him, like you just have to go for it. And you're probably going to end up having to do it day after day, time after time. And I mean, 90% is saying it's not going to work and it won't, but you know, 10%, 7% of the time, the bull's going to make a mistake or, you know, it'll actually work out like you think it's going to work out and you'll get a shot and you'll get a chance to kill a bull. But I mean, it feels like a bit of a cop-out. It's not like there's a tip or a trick or a piece of gear that's going to make the biggest difference for you in the world. Like, I really think if you're going to go on a late season spot in stock archery elk hunt, like, you just have to have an attitude like, I am going to go for every opportunity, no matter how low the opportunity for success.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, it is fun. I recommend it. I'm sure it'll probably take a few, you know, maybe half a year or something for the novelty of it to where, to like come back, you know, to where I'm like, yeah, I want to do that again. Yeah. You know, I know that when I came home, I was like, ah, maybe I will apply for some rut hunts, you know, but, I would think here within a few months when application comes open, I'll probably have a late archery hunt on my application just because
looking forward to it again.
Yeah. Looking forward to it again. It's just fun, fun time of year. And like I said, take a buddy.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference. But
What was your broadhead setup?
Oh yeah. So arrow setup. And I didn't even tell you where I hit this. Where I hit him.
Yeah, the first shot.
I didn't even say that. So yeah. So first shot, actually hit him, and I don't know if it's because that's where I hit. I didn't feel like it. It felt like I made a really good shot. There's a decent chance that, you know, as he was looking at me, maybe he turned into me, like front leg going back. But I actually hit him, perfect as far as height goes. So like it would have been like top of heart, maybe lungs, but actually hit him kind of in the shoulder, like in the leg. Interestingly enough, this arrow bow setup broke his front leg.
Really?
Clean in half.
Huh.
I'm talking broke in half. I never seen anything quite like it, but completely broke the entire bone in half.
Wow.
And got a little penetration beyond that even. So, which again, it's hard to jump on a podcast or on a mic and say that like, that's what happened, but that's what happened. Yeah, broke the whole leg. So it's a gold tip platinum pierce, 250 spine, a 75 grain Easton half out, so stainless steel aluminum half out, 75 grain, and then 100 grain sever hybrid, 1.5. And total arrow weight was about 478-480 grains, coming out of that Matthews arc, shooting about 286 feet per second. But yeah, it was, I should have taken photos of it. They've probably been a little bit gory. But yeah, it opened him up and he bled like crazy, but it did break that entire leg, broke the whole leg. And for an arrow, like I'm pretty well sold on that arrow.
And the arrow came back out and wasn't broken?
Arrow came back out whole. The only thing that had happened is it bent the insert, like at the collar.
Yeah.
Was bent over maybe at like a 35, 45 degree angle, but the broadhead itself, the arrow itself, completely intact. And I've shot a bunch of different arrows over the years. I've always felt like I got really good durability and like really good toughness out of a gold tip arrow. That for me just kind of like cemented it. Like I couldn't believe that that arrow just didn't shatter, didn't break, you know, didn't give. But yeah, that gold tip pierce just held up like gangbusters.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty gnarly.
Yeah, that seemed like wild.
Neville probably has some photos. We could probably.
I'm sure he probably does.
Yeah, I was the guy that was just like so in it that I was just like trying to like process everything and like make sure it all worked out. And then, you know, after the fact, Neville came over and Neville had his phone out and he was videoing all kinds of stuff and took tons of photos and stuff. But overall, really super cool experience. And, you know, I'm grateful for it. Butcher did a phenomenal job. It was really cool. The other thing I wanted to say before we jump off, and we got to jump off because you got a meeting, but. Last thing I will say, we've asked this question before to like people that are non-residents, right? Like, and it feels like to me, there's this just like thing going on right now in hunting. Like people hate non-residents.
Oh, it's big time.
It feels like it's like this deepening thing, right? Like people hate non-residents. Like you got I've read all the comments and stuff on Montana on them reducing, you know, deer tags for non-residents. Tons of people saying like, good on ya, you know, way to go. That should happen for
elk. Hunt your own state.
Yeah. Hunt your own state. There's tons of that. Like, you know, Idaho and the whole thing in Wyoming. I just feel like there's this like collective, people are like, oh, we hate non-residents, right? Arizona, people that I talked to could not, and I mean could not, have been more friendly. Hmm. Everybody I talked to was so cool. People in side-by-sides that I ran into, really friendly, really nice. There was a guy named Benito, hopefully doesn't mind me using his name, but we ran into, we would see him pretty much every single day. You know, the first day, short conversation, you know, where are you, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, kind of
the
standard, kind of thing, right?
Next day, a little bit longer. By the end of that hunt, we were stopping by. He was stopping by our camp. Like, we were just shooting the bull, but just so friendly and just really nice. So shout out to Arizona for being a friendly hunter. And I'll tell you one thing, like, it made me be like, man, we're all in this together. I need to be more friendly to people when I see people. Mm-hmm. Like, it made the entire experience that much better because it was just such a nice environment. Like, when I ran into people, I was never like intimidated or like pissed off. Mm-hmm. It was just like, this is going to be an awesome interaction. And it was every single
time.
That's
super cool.
It was really, really cool.
Yeah. It's great to see.
Yeah. So shout out to the residents of Arizona. And you know, it put a little something in the back of my mind, like, you know what? I need to be better because we're all in this for the same love. We're all doing the same damn thing.
Yeah. We all love hunting.
We all love it. That's why we're out there. Yeah. I mean, if anything, like, that's the most kindred spirit you're going to find. Mm-hmm. Like, they are you.
Yep.
And you are them.
This is exactly the truth.
Yeah. So
they're all doing the same exact thing you are. They want to be out there. They want to be enjoying it. Soak up the memories, make lifetime memories.
Yeah.
Doing the thing they love. You love it. They love it.
Absolutely.
And you should all get along.
Yeah. Dude, almost every person I ran to, hey, if you get one down, you need help. I know it's only the two of you or whatever. Hit me up. Here's my cell phone number.
That's super cool.
And I have no doubt in my mind that had I hit any of those individuals up, they would have been there. Mm-hmm. Like, which was really, really cool and refreshing and made me want to be a little bit better in the field to other hunters, whether they're residents or non-residents. So I'm gonna wrap it up with that.
That's super cool. Good hunt. Good bull.
Good hunt. Yeah, good bull.
Good on you guys.
Yeah, glad it worked out. And shout out to Neville. Thanks for all your help, buddy.
Yeah, love that guy.
Yeah, good dude.
Such a fun guy to hang out with.
Good. He's a good hang.
Yeah.
Yeah, never a bad hang with him. But yeah, that'll wrap it up. We're back in tomorrow. We have Randy Newberg for next week. So
yep,
it'd be fun to visit with Randy and catch up with him.
Yep, and I can't say anything quite yet. We're going to do a little shooting type announcement here for my podcast name, but I think I got like 160 some submissions for podcast name for my podcast. And there's quite a few that are actually the one that I was leaning towards, but we're going to put it to a little rifle shooting thing and I'm going to pick the name based on how I shoot. So it'll be kind of fun.
Nice.
I'm going to do that on Friday and then we'll make a little announcement and probably be a couple people who hopefully we'll get a little gift from Go Hunt because we don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to toss out something for one of the guys if it hits their the name they selected. So that's cool.
Do you know when first episodes for your podcast will be going out?
I think it's going to be first of the year.
Okay.
So around that first week of January.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very cool. Probably
do an announcement podcast, and I'm going to do, I know it's been requested a ton on our podcast, like, hey, Brady, get your dad on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So I'm going to, you know, Minnesota for Christmas and going to get my dad on the podcast. A lot of cool
That'd
stories.
That'd be good. Yeah. For people who listen to my podcast, I apologize that you haven't had more recent episodes, but I've been out hunting elk. What do you want me to do?
Just been out on your old sabbatical, having fun, making memories, talking to Arizona residents.
That's it. But I'll be back with more episodes. So I actually have a bunch of stuff. I made a list Monday, just a bunch of stuff I want to talk about. So I'll be back regular.
And we have to go right now, give Paul a hard time because his bull's not here. He took his bull home.
I know.
And I kind of wanted you to see his bull.
I wanted to put the two of them together, do a little spar.
Ooh. I wonder if they've ever met before.
Yeah. Well, probably not.
Probably not.
All right. We're out.
All right. Appreciate you, bro.
Yep. Thanks.